honored to be the Eastern Conference Player of the Week. Couldn't have won it without my teammates and coaches, but we still have work to do.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and as always you can find me on Twitter at @redrock_bball. We've got a lot to talk about today. We've got 8 games from Monday to recap. We've got 5 games for Tuesday to preview and we've got an NBA coach that was fired. So
let's get to it.
That is a great idea, Mr. Bolton. Don't forget this podcast is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And before I get into talking about all the news of the day, I want you to take a listen to something that was on yesterday's Locked On NBA podcast hosted by David Locke. He had Peter Edmiston on, the host of Locked On Grizzlies, and they were discussing the Memphis situation before the news of the Fizdale firing came down. Peter nailed it right on the head, and he had the inkling that this might happen. So just take a listen to this clip from Locked On NBA discussing the Grizzlies situation with Peter Edmiston.
Could this be the beginning of a road that leads to a Gasol trade and starts a full-out rebuild for the Memphis Grizzlies?
I always kind of thought after last year that it would be either Mark or Fizdale. You know, an 8-game losing streak could balloon to, like, something crazy if they don't get this fixed ASAP. And very few coaches can survive when things aren't going well and you reel off a double-digit losing streak. So it may lead to a Gasol trade. It may lead to Fizdale being fired. I think it's a coin flip at this point. Which one of those is more likely?
Well, there you have it, Peter. Yeah, I guess sort of predicting that the Grizzlies might look to part ways with David Fizdale yesterday. Of course, go and listen to Locked On NBA with David Locke from yesterday and Locked On Grizzlies. We must listen to podcast today with Peter breaking down all the news from the Grizzlies situation and the firing of David Fizdale. Now, I want to give my opinion on this David Fizdale thing. I talked about him yesterday quite a bit, saying I don't believe that he is necessarily a very good coach. I get quite a bit of pushback on that, and I tweeted that out today. Many people who don't follow me seem to get a handle, or seem to view that tweet somehow. You know, what is the fantasy guy? No, you don't know anything, mate. Come on. I don't think he's a good coach. I don't think he's a terrible coach, but I didn't think he was a good coach. And that's not saying that, again, he's not terrible. He's not Fred Hoiberg. He's not down in that area of, man, you are a shithouse coach. But he's not a good coach. He's not a top half of the NBA coach. I would say he's probably on the border of a bottom 10 coach in the NBA. And from all reports, ripper bloke. Massive, great bloke. Top bloke. One of the toppest blokes of all blokes that have topped. Yeah, really, really good bloke. And you see that coming out today from many players that have played with him and people shocked because he's got such a good reputation across the NBA. Really decent player development. And I am not talking about the fact that the Grizzlies have lost 8 games in a row. You should know me well enough to know when I talk about coach performances, you know, it's not all about wins and losses and all that sort of stuff because there are different aims that you should have. And I really criticize coaches who are, you know, coaching for their jobs and not doing stuff for the best overall outcome rather than to get each one game at a time. That sort of mentality is bullshit to me. So it's not about, oh, they lost 8 games in a row, Fizdale has to go. It means he's a bad coach. I'm well aware that not having Mike Conley is bad. Yeah, some of their drafting issues have not been good. Some of their free agency issues have not been good. The organization is an underreported shit show with some of the stuff that happens with ownership. You know, the Dave Yeager situation, Yeager was at fault, ownership was at fault there as well. There's been many, many problems with this Grizzlies organization. But there are certain things that Fizdale has done as a coach that I haven't liked. I haven't liked a lot of his rotational decisions. The Marc Gasol thing yesterday was very weird, and now the reports come out that those two just don't get along, and there's been friction between them for a long time, and that the organization just took Gasol's side. Now, it wasn't Gasol coming out and saying, it's either me or him. No truth to that whatsoever, apparently, from the reports that I've seen. So it wasn't Gasol saying, either you trade me, or you get rid of Fizz. That doesn't appear to be the case at all. And this doesn't really change much. And everyone seems to, and again, it might leave me on a rant here. Trade rumors. Oh, I need to trade Marc Gasol because he's going to get traded. Well, is he? They had someone, when DeAndre Jordan gets traded to the Clippers, I need to trade him now to the Cavs. I need to trade him because he's going to get traded. Basing your fantasy decisions on these trades, which are very, very pipe dreamy, it has been no, unless Woj says this trade is happening, it's not happening most of the time. It's just someone sitting around going, well, what if? And then getting their trade machine out and trying to figure it out. So I don't see much changing here in terms of Gasol's value. I don't see much changing here in terms of Conley's value. People do try to invent scenarios. They're like, oh, now that Fizdale's gone, I think it's better for Conley because when he comes back, Fizdale was probably only going to play him 20 minutes a night anyway for the rest of the season, and maybe now that they're pushing for wins, Conley will play more minutes. That's just a narrative that just is not based in reality to me. And people are worried about how Tyreek's going to be used now. Like, when you've got limited good players, the good players are going to play. JB Bickerstaff, I don't think he's going to come in and change much. And interim coaches don't come in and change a lot with the style or scheme of the team because they've got no ability to implement new things. We're not talking about a team that's had all offseason to plan. He's been part of the coaching situation. There might be a couple of players where he goes, you know what, Andy Harrison, you don't deserve to be in an NBA roster or in an NBA rotation. I'm not going to play you. And that's totally fine. But it won't be just complete overhauls. And Tyreek, you're now playing 20 minutes a night. And we're going to start pushing Jermichael Green to 40 minutes a night and play him as a small forward or whatever sort of crazy bullshit. Like, this sort of stuff just won't change too much. Fizdale, river bloke, not so good coach. And I don't want to hear, LeBron came out, Dwayne Wade came out, and they said he's a good coach. I don't give a shit. LeBron said that Shabazz Napier was the best player in that draft class. Wrong. Like, players, in general, are horrific evaluators of talent and of coaches. Horrific. It's almost without exception that they are horrific evaluators of those things. Fizdale, they had a great relationship with Fizdale, so they stick up for him. And that is 100% understandable. But to think that they are the be-all and end-all of evaluation of a coach's ability is 100% incorrect. Because, again, they're not with him in Memphis. They never worked under him as a head coach. So they've got no basis to say, he was an assistant coach. He was good. We were mates with him. Cool. Good stuff. That's awesome. Well done, LeBron. Good on you. But there's nothing against LeBron, but people would bring up that, well, LeBron says he's a good coach, so you must be wrong. Nah, that's not necessarily how any of this works. So Fizdale out, JB Bickerstaff taking over. Not much changes from a fantasy point of view, maybe some marginal things, but this team is just so handicapped with what they've got. There's not much that he's going to be able to do. I don't think this changes the likelihood of a Marc Gasol trade. I don't think it makes it more likely or less likely. I thought it was pretty unlikely anyway, almost impossibly unlikely to begin with. And I think that's pretty much where it remains now that this firing has gone down. I will say this. It was truly shocking to see that firing this morning from Woj. Absolutely shocking. I don't think Fizdale is a good coach, as I said, but there is absolutely no way that I think it was the right decision for them to fire him. I think that is completely unproductive for them to do that at this point. In fact, most of the time, firing a coach during the season is not a productive exercise. Now, for Earl Watson, totally understandable. Should never have been hired in the first place. I was 100% behind the hiring of David Fizdale, and he should have been given at least another season, maybe another one after that, to see what was happening. But just because I believe in that doesn't mean that I necessarily think he was a good coach. Probably the 20th, 21st, 19th best coach in the NBA, if I did rough rankings there. Again, got into arguments with people saying he was a top coach. Nah, he's not a top coach at all. Not even close to a top coach. Not a top 10 coach. Nowhere near a top 5 coach. Not a top 15 coach. And that's fine. People have to be worse, but it doesn't mean that he was this infallible figure. And that's pretty much all I've got to say about David Fizdale. But I do recommend that you guys do go and check out the Locked On. I know I'll be listening to Locked On Grizzlies for Tuesday's show to hear about Peter's take on all this firing. He had some good tweets come out today. Many of the Memphis people will tell you on the beat, great bloke, shocking firing, but it's not like the team was playing well. It's not like the team was cohesive. It's not like he didn't make questionable lineup changes, questionable tactical decisions, questionable rotation things. He did it all the time, and he was still figuring it out. That's why I would have preferred him to get another year and a half to 2 years to see what he could do. But what he had done so far had not been perfect, and it had not even been on the good side of average. Right, we're going to get into all of our regular stuff that we talk about now after that Fizdale firing has gone down. So let's get stuck straight into recapping all of Monday's action. We will start with the monstrous line of the night. This bloke, he is ridiculous. Jim Harden with another big one. He had 20 points in the first quarter against the Nets. He had 25 and 4 in the first quarter, which is a line which 90% of players in the NBA would be happy with for a game. He finished up with 37, 10, and 8. He hit 8 triples. He had 2 steals and 2 blocks. He was 13 of 20 from the field. He was 3 of 4 from the line. And the amazing thing about this is that Jim Harden went to the line 4 times in a game only. Only 4 times and still scored 37. He is the number one ranked player in fantasy. And you can say, oh yeah, but he hasn't played with Chris Paul all season. When Chris Paul was out, he wasn't the number one player. Chris Paul is back, and now he has become the number one player. His numbers have somehow increased in the time that Paul is back. In the last 3 games, he's averaging 32, 7, and 9. Yes, 32, 7, and 9 on 49%. In fact, Chris Paul returning has helped his efficiency. He is at a true shooting of 65%. He was my number one guy on the Basketball Monster projections heading into the season. Didn't mean that he was a guaranteed number one to pick there. You could have picked him or Giannis. They were probably my 2 guys to pick at number one. And at the moment, he's clearly paying that back. Absolutely just a dominating, dominating player. He is a clear favorite for me for MVP at this point. Clear, there shouldn't be anyone really even close to him at this stage for MVP. And I hope he gets it. He's really been deserving of MVP. I thought he should have won it last season. I thought he probably should have won it the season that Steph won it as well. So he has been really, really fantastic. And yeah, look, if you picked him, you could have got him at pick 5, pick 6, and that was an absolute bloody bargain if you were able to do that for Big Jim Harden. Let's talk about the waiver wire line of the night. He is also the young gun of the night, and it is one of my boys, and that's Pat McCaw of the Golden State Warriors. McCaw, the surprise starter. Nobody really saw this coming, considering McCaw has been out of the rotation for the majority of the season. He moved in with Steph Curry out, not Sean Livingston. 16, 3, and 7, 2 threes, 4 steals, 1 block, 5 of 8 from the field, and 4 of 4 from the line. One thing we do know about McCaw is he is a very good player in terms of getting steals or accumulating steals, and that's one of the reasons I really do like him from a dynasty point of view, because I've mentioned this plenty of times. Players with high steal rates will, in general, and it probably happens with more correlation than revenge games, shout out to revenge games, they become decent to good NBA players. One of the reasons I was pretty high on Don Mitchell coming into the season, a really strong steal rate. And that's one of the reasons I'm big on McCaw. Now, my take on him over the last 2 years has been wait for Iguodala to move on or to retire or to decline or for McCaw to go to another team, which could happen next season when he's a restricted free agent. And then we get some value. It's been weird for him this season. It hasn't been great, but this was a huge indication, I guess, of what he can produce. It's not like he's been inefficient. He's shooting 60% true shooting this year, 51% from the field, 39% from three, averaging 0.6 steals in only 13 minutes, which is on a per 36 basis at 1.7 steals. Really, really strong. The problem is that Steve Kerr said that both him and Nick Young can't be in the rotation on the same night. So when everyone's healthy, he just won't play every night. When you're looking at dynasty value, I do believe in him, and I do think he's got top 120 upside at some point in his career, maybe even higher. And if you can work as a point guard, hit threes, get assists, get steals, you're pretty much a lock for a top 100 if you can get those numbers. And it was encouraging to see him used in that role today. Shit, I would take him on the Bulls over Chris Dunn, I reckon, and over Jaren Grant. I would love to see them develop him, but that's because I'm not a massive Chris Dunn fan, as you're probably well aware, but good showing from Pat McCaw. But as I said, he's just not going to be in the rotation every single night. And unfortunately, 2 of my boys on the Warriors, Bell and McCaw, they're just not an every night part of the rotation. If they were both on the Bulls, Bell would be a top 50 player and McCaw would be a top 100 guy. And maybe that's a level of exaggeration, but I don't think it's that big of an exaggeration. It's not like the Bulls had any opportunity, though, to draft Jordan Bell. Didn't have that chance, so I guess we'll never know. The dud of the night goes to Jaylen Brown of the Boston Celtics. I tell a man's not hot. Yes, Brown, 9 points, 6 rebounds, 1 3 and 1 assist, but the percentage has killed you. 4 of 10 from the field and missed both his free throws again. No defensive numbers from Jaylen. His free throws have been a huge, huge issue. 59% on 4 attempts per game. I thought he was starting to turn around, but no, he has regressed once more, and that is in punt free throw territory. He is a negative 2.74 with his Z score for that category, and that is a hard category to come back from, and that makes him the 137th ranked player this season. Yeah, he's averaging 15.5 points and 2 threes and 6 rebounds. All very nice. 1.2 steals. Pretty decent. But 1 assist per game is piss poor. 0.3 blocks is not ideal, and that free throw percentage is a massive, massive concern. It's weird because he's shooting 41% on threes and at 47% from the field, and he is still 100% a must-own player. But he is a guy that I think you can get value from if you look to trade him, if people do believe that he can be a top 60 guy, which I don't. with the lack of assist numbers and then the poor percentages, which do really cost him. Really good for the Celtics this year, but not as good a fantasy asset as what Jason Tatum is. And he's one of those guys, again, that coming out of college, his game just didn't translate very well for fantasy. And we're seeing that now. He's having a season that everyone would say, you know what, having a really good season, but still ranked outside the top 135 in fantasy does not make you a very good fantasy player. In fact, far from it. You know, on most teams, he's like the second worst or worst player. And that is not the ingredients for a very, very good player, quite clearly. Or very, very good fantasy player, more to the point. Let's get into these games now, talk about them in a little bit of extra detail, all eight games from Monday. The first one of those we'll talk about is the Orlando Magic and the Indiana Pacers. Big as Gordon with a very strong game, 16-6, but the 4 threes and the 4 blocks is fantastic with a steal. He's been really, really fantastic this season. I've said fantastic too many times. Nick Vooch also had 16-12 with 2 triples and 3 blocks, so a nice night from Vooch. Now, the Magic made a change to their starting lineup. John Simmons, he started over Terry Ross. 34 minutes for Simo, while Rossi played only 25 in a bench role. 7-5-3 for Ross with a triple one. He still took his 11 shots. Took 6 triples and only hit one of them. At best, he's a 3-point streamer for standard leagues. Now, a lot of people are really, really ready to go the old rusty trombone on John Simmons. I'm not quite as much in his camp. He is shooting, I think, 9% true shooting points better than last season. His usage is at 24%. Again, massive career highs. But so much of John Simmons' value, like in this game, comes from points. He had 21 here, 3 rebounds, 1 assist, and 4 triples. And his usage was still at 24%. I believe, though, in the starting lineup, he will see his usage fall. He will play more minutes alongside Vooch, alongside Fournier, and alongside As Gordon. So his usage should drop in most of these games. And yes, he will likely get more minutes. I don't know if it will necessarily be 34 minutes every night, but he will likely get more minutes in this new role, and that might offset the decrease in usage. But at the moment, he is like the 170th ranked player this season. It might even be worse than that. I probably should double check that exact number. It might even be worse than where that is. Let's have a quick look as this loads up. He's 183rd ranked player this season, averaging 14-3. And shooting, again, a massive career high, 58% true shooting as opposed to 50% last season. So, yeah, can he maintain the high efficiency on the high usage of 25%, which he currently is at? He had 24% of this one. I do believe that the usage drops down and it puts him to just outside the top 150. But by all means, if you've got a streaming spot, add him. But just don't expect the world, as some people do tend to expect from John Simmons. He's just isn't as good as what some people think. DJ Augustine played some extra minutes here, 11-1-4, while Lord Alfred Payton, he wasn't at his best, but it's still not a horrendous line, 15-3-5 in 26 minutes for Lord. Evan Fournier, 12-2-4, his numbers have significantly fallen off since that hot start at the start of the season. We knew that was going to happen, and it's crashing back down pretty quickly for him. The Pacers, Vic Oladipo, huge stuff, 26-6-5, 4 triples, 2 steals, and 4 blocks. Revenge game? It's only the 4th time that he's played the Magic since leaving there, and he has had a team in between there, and it's been 18 months since he was a part of this organization, so I don't know how long you can stretch the revenge game narrative bullshit out for, but he was legit ridiculous, hit 11, or all 11, his first 11 shots, that's more accurate, then missed the next 3 to finish on 79%. That's a massive, massive line. I'm a huge Oladipo fan, and really do like what he's been able to do this season. He has been an absolute monster. Just quickly on the revenge game stuff, what I did on Thanksgiving, I know I tweeted it out, but I haven't spoken about it on the podcast, is I looked through the start of this season, every player in the top 200 that had played a game against their team that they were on last season for the first time. So a guy like Boogie, he'd already played the Kings once last year, so I didn't count his game against the Kings this year. So that was my criteria. And you can make also, but Boogie left on bad terms and he hadn't gone back to Sacramento. I didn't do that. I just did your first game against your former team after playing with them last season. That's the way I did it. There'd been 28 such instances so far this season, and on average, those players performed 0.16% worse in those games against their former team than they did on average through the season using FanDuel average scoring. So you could talk categories, whatever, but I just went with the official NBA scoring, with FanDuel scoring, so DFS people can pay note as well, 0.16% less. Some of these guys went crazy. They had massive games in these revenge game scenarios. Eric Bledsoe, Greggy Monroe put up these big numbers. Paul George, shitful. Daz Collison, horrendous. Even today, you can put Victor Oladipo in there as a revenge game. How did Avery Bradley go? How did Marcus Morris go? Roto World put out a headline today. Lou Williams scores 40 in revenge game against the Lakers. That fuels the narrative. Avery Bradley had a revenge game? Nothing. Marcus Morris revenge game? Nothing. Aaron Baines revenge game? Nothing. Like, nothing. Like, where does it draw the line? And I'm not saying that this doesn't happen, because it clearly players do get a boost sometimes. But the other times, they don't. And I'm going to shut up about this eventually. My main point on it is that when it doesn't happen, nobody talks about it. So it acts like that every revenge game is a big deal and every player is going to go off, and they never report the negative side of it, when literally it is basically 0.16% means that they are, on average, exactly the same as what they do every other game. And that's my point of bringing it across, is highlighting the other side that never, ever, ever gets reported on. So that you can see there are two, Lou Williams, revenge game, revenge game, Joshy, revenge game, But the three other guys that did it today, shit the bed. So which one is it? Anyway, Lance Stephenson, massive line from Lancey, 24 minutes off the bench. The Pacers went to an 8-man rotation. TJ Leaf out of the rotation here, 18-8-5 for Lance with a 1-1. I wouldn't be expecting 50% shooting from three from him, but the minutes were interesting and the production was nice. Still more a 14-teamer. And everyone really pissed with Miles Turner. He still played 30 minutes. He had 18-4 with 3 triples and 2 blocks. That's not horrendous. He is still a top 50 player this year, despite the protestations of people who have taken him in the second round. I understand. If you take a guy in the second round, you don't want him to be the 48th ranked player, which is what Miles Turner currently is. He's getting a marginal increase in usage, but not a massive one. Victor Oladipo is taking on a lot there, and the form of Domantas Sabonis is impacting Turner to a degree. He's not an outright bust. I think he will improve. He got a smack in the face in this one and went to the locker room for 3 or 4 minutes. That impacted what he could do also. Maybe he doesn't finish as a top 20 guy, but I think he can easily get back and be a top 35 player, probably and almost definitely a top 30 guy. It's just that maybe the expectations we had from him, he hasn't taken as big a leap as what we would have hoped in his third year, but I wouldn't say he's been an out-and-out disappointment. Bojan Bogdanovic bounced back, 22 points, nothing else. The typical Bojan line. Well, Daz Collison was shitful. It was almost like he was playing against a former team. 7-2-2 with 2 steals in 28 minutes, while Thaddeus Young was 1-9 for 2-5-5. I should talk about Sabonis, who had 19-8-5, and he is clearly one of the most improved players in the NBA this season. 27 minutes for him, and you still need to hold him in 12-team leagues. How it's going to go long-term remains to be seen, but they're playing a three-man front court rotation, him, Young, and Turner. There's 96 minutes to go around with those guys. They could very easily get 32 minutes apiece. So there are plenty of minutes for them. But in this one, the Pacers actually went small, and that got more minutes for Stephenson. We saw Bojan Bogdanovic play at the four a little bit as well, because if you add up those minutes for those big men, 30 for Thad, 27 for Sabonis, and 30 for Turner. Well, that doesn't equal 96, so there's more minutes there for some of these smaller guys, and that's going to have some of that extra value taken away from guys like Turner and even Sabonis. The next game, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Cavs stomped the Sixers. LeBron came out. He was on fire. Only needed to play 31 minutes, and that's a good indication of a stomping. 30-13-6 for LeBron James. The plumber J.R. Smith had a death in his family, but he was able to play 28 minutes, 11 points with 3 triples, just a 3-point streamer, while Jose Calderon remained starting even with Iman Shumpert back. Shumpert returned, played 7 minutes and had the 7 trillion, while Calderon played 23 minutes and scored 0 points with 5 assists and 2 steals. Neither of those guys are 12-team guys, probably not even 14-team league players. Kevin Love, 13-3-2, was okay, while Jeff Green had a double-double, 14-10 in 27 minutes. Onto the Sixers, Ben Simmons played through the elbow issue but then sprained his ankle late. X-rays were negative, so we hope there's no issue there with Simmo. It was late in the game. It was a blowout, so all I can say is let's hope that it was just literally precaution that they took him out and he didn't return, but obviously we want to pay attention. If he is out, Šarić and, of course, TJ McConnell get an increased boost, especially McConnell, who would become a must-own player. As for Joel Embiid, 30-11, no other stats. That's a little bit disappointing, but otherwise not a bad night for him. While McConnell had 11-6-3 in 28, and Šarić had 8-10. JJ Redick, 11-2-3, just a ho-hum night from him. He couldn't hit anything. He just couldn't hit layups. He was at 4 of 16 from the field, a horrible night. And if you want to talk horrible, Bob Cove had 1 of 11 from the field. 2 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists and a steal. It will happen. We know it will happen. It happened to him for about a month last season. But no need to really panic. Also interesting, Rashawn Holmes saw 5 minutes of action here, but again, you know what I'm going to say. Rashawn Holmes owned in 11% of leagues, Amir Johnson in 1, when Amir is clearly ahead of Rashawn Holmes in the center rotation in Philadelphia. The Portland Trailblazers and the New York Knicks, Dame Lillard, 32-1-5, another really strong performance from him. But I think the biggest name, that's not true. The player that people want to know about the most is Pat Connaughton, who started again, 26 minutes for Pat, 17-2-2. He went full Boyan. 3 triples on 7 of 9 shooting, but more importantly, that's 30 minutes in the last game and 26 in this one. So he does have that 3-point streaming capability. He can do a little bit of other things as well, but he is more of a 3-point streamer for deeper league. But his play has rendered Mo Harkless and Evan Turner totally useless and has really put the kibosh on Shabazz Napier's little rise up the rankings. Napier still had 3 steals, but gone from 27 minutes a night down to 18 minutes a night with the rise of Connaughton. I never thought that I would have to say the sentence, the rise of Connaughton, at all, but it's legitimately a thing. Noel Vonleh, also a thing. 8-12 in 31 minutes, and that's 2 consecutive games with over 30 minutes for Vonleh. But remember, El-Farouq Aminu is going to come back in the next game, and that is going to take some of Vonleh's minutes away. Now, I still believe that Vonleh will start, and he will play 22-23 a night. Ed Davis will lose some time. Connaughton might even lose some playing time. And shit, you might even see legit Mo Harkless out of the rotation entirely. That is a possibility. So Vonleh, not really looking at a 12-team ad, but for rebounds, there are no better rebound streamers out there than Vonleh. He is a monster in getting those. Yeah, a real threat for double-doubles. And if you're in a double-double league, they're hard to get off the waiver wire. Vonleh could be that guy. Yeah, he could easily get those cheap 10 and 10 double-doubles and get you 8 or 9 rebounds on other nights as well, even in a 22-minute role. Yusuf Nurkic dished out the assist, but overall disappointing, especially with the percentages, 12, 9, and 6 for Yus. On to the Knicks. Kristaps Porzingis was back.
Porzingis.
He had 22-7, a steal and a block. Good to see him back. But Enes Kanter out again. Now, Kanter thinks that he will be right to go for Wednesday. He won't be 100%, but he will be right to go. With him out, the cock monster Kylo Quinn started again, 8-11 in 25 minutes. Bill Hernan Gomez was shitful, 5-9 in 16 minutes, while Joakim Noah made his season debut and scored 2 points in 3 minutes. Noah is the fourth string center, so clearly no value there, and I just don't see anything happening for Bill this season. Courtney Lee was decent once more, 14 points, while Michael Beasley went from a starting role scoring 30 points to a 7.14 minute role. Jeff Hornacek continuing to do weird shit. Ramon Sessions was back in the rotation for God knows what reason. Frank Ntilikina played 20 minutes, while Jarrett Jack just the 21, and if there's someone else out there and you're holding Frank, I don't think his upside's high enough that he is an absolute 100% mustache guy. So if you want to drop him for someone else, I think that's a totally reasonable decision to make. The Detroit Pistons and the Boston Celtics is a massive win for the Pistons, fueled by the excellent performance of Andre Drummond. 26 points, 22 rebounds, 6 assists and 4 steals. Now, there's a couple of things to unpack here. The 26 points is fantastic. He has pretty much eliminated post-ups, which was something that I railed upon against him and Van Gundy for the past couple of seasons. When you're not good at something, stop forcing it. Stop doing post-ups, and they've realized, they're going, you know what? Not good at it. Probably shouldn't force it. Let's just do the shit that I'm good at, and you know what? It works. Real amazing stuff. The 22 boards, we knew he could do that. I had no idea he could be this level of a passer. 6 assists here, and the free throws, 6 of 8 from the line. 4 steals, we knew he was a very good steals man for a big man. I've always been a decent fan of Drummond, but he has exceeded my expectations. Toby Harris, always been a huge fan of him as well, but he has clearly exceeded my expectations as well. 31-8 with 5 triples, just takes his game to another level every season. Also, just a quick shout out to Orlando Magic, who traded him away on a reasonable contract at the age of 23. For 1 year of Ersan Ilyasova and 1 year of Brandon Jennings, one of the more shitful trades in recent NBA memory. Avery Bradley, in his return to Boston, had 13 points with 5 assists and 2 steals, while Reggie Jackson had 20 points with 7 dimes. Stan Johnson, the minutes are there, the defense is fine, the fantasy production is not. He is a 14-16 team league player. On to the Celtics, Kyrie, 18-4-9, got to the line 7 times, which is a positive. Unfortunately, hit just 5 of those, but it's good to see him getting there. The 9 assists is nice as well. Jaylen Brown returned from that funeral for his best mate. As I said, he was not ideal. While Jason Tatum had 10, 3, and 4, which is solid without being spectacular. Speaking of solid without being spectacular, Marcus Morris had 13, 4, and 2. And he's a perfect 14-team league. Gonna have to talk about the East Coast Steph Curry. Marcus Smart had 23 points, 3 rebounds, and 6 assists. He was 6 of 9 from 3. He was 8 of 13 from the field. Now, this is not a turnaround for Marcus Smart. He's not becoming a great shooter. But as I have said, and you're probably sick to death of me talking about it, Josh, shut up. People don't shoot 20%. They don't. And it will absolutely turn around. I told you that for Tim Hardaway, and it turned around in about a week. And I said that for Marcus Smart. It took longer. But there is absolutely no way that he was going to shoot 24% from the field for the season. And we've seen that the last couple of games. All these other numbers are fine. And when the shot comes around, his value is going to really start peaking back up. And I think he should be owned in all leagues if you are punting field goals or your team is that far ahead in field goal percentage that you can afford to take the hit. Check out your team. I can't tell you if you should add him or not. You have to look and you need to see whether that's possible. Brooklyn and Houston. Well, this Nets team, it's a real weird one. No Damari Carroll, no blue swimmer Alan Crabb, no Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. So they're trotting out a pretty Frankenstein-y type starting lineup. Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, Jumpin' Joe Harris, Trev Booker, and Tyler Zeller. It's hard to get too much of a grasp on what happened here. One thing I will focus on is Caris LeVert looks much, much better. 13-2-6 with 2 steals. The assists and the steals and the three-point shooting ability is what draws me to LeVert. The problem is his role and his minutes aren't high enough to be a 12-team league guy. Spencer Dinwiddie had 14-4-7. The efficiency wasn't ideal, but he should still be owned, obviously. Well, Tim Mozgov made a return to the rotation. Surprising return. He played 19 minutes, while Jarrett Allen also saw 19-7-6 for Mozzie with 2 blocks in his 19 minutes. And out of the blue, Isaiah Whitehead played 28, had 24 points on just 16 shots, but he's not going to play. He's just not in the rotation most nights, so don't get too excited. And same as the 28 minutes from the sexy boy, Sean Kilpatrick. He had 12-6 with 2 triples in 28 minutes. Everyone's healthy. That guy's not playing. On to the Rockets. There was no Nene. Clint Capella, he always feasts in those situations. 28 minutes, 20-6 with 2 blocks. He is awesome. Well, Chris Paul scored just 4 points. It's not great, but 6 rebounds, 14 assists, 2 steals, 0 turnovers, 1 of 7 shooting. A weird line, but he has been really good at getting those assists. There's no concern with the assist numbers. The shot at some point will start falling. I'm not worried about that. Again, he shot 14% here. Players don't shoot 14%. He will become better than that, and he will get that back on track. PJ Tucker moved back to the bench, and Ryan Anderson started, but I don't give a shit. Neither of those are 12-team league guys. They both hit 3 triples. You can stream Anderson in for 3s, and that's it. I reckon Eric Gordon's going to be close to a streaming-only option soon. 29 minutes for Gordo, 12-4-1. He's just not got the same role with Chris Paul back. The minutes are down, the playmaking's down, the drive to the basket and the free throws are all down. All things that were entirely predictable, and he was the most obvious dog's balls-ish type sell-high player around, and hopefully you were able to do that. If not, there's absolutely zero chance that you're going to be able to do that now because you're not selling high because he's back to being not great. The Dallas Mavericks and the San Antonio Spurs. The Mavericks, they've been pretty plucky lately, couldn't get the victory here. Wes Matthews played, even though he was questionable with a calf issue, hit 5 triples for 19 points with 2 assists, while Devin Harris played 26 minutes and had 13-5, while JJ Barea had 16-4-7 with 3 steals. And Barea is absolutely a 12-team type of player, not a must-own, and not even a should-own. But again, if your roster had him on, I'd go, you know what, this guy probably needs assists, and it makes sense. That's how well he is playing. Now, when Seth Curry comes back, he'll lose a couple of minutes, and that will render him not even someone you want to consider in 12s. But for now, looking good. 19-1-5 for the Woodslanger, Dennis Smith, while Dirk had 11-4-2 in his 26 minutes. Another decent Dirk night. The pencil Harrison Barnes was horrendously inefficient, but had 13-8-4. I'm sure none of you are shocked at the fact that he had no defensive numbers. Nerlens Noel, healthy, didn't play a single second, while Yogi Ferrell played just 21 minutes. And he was 0 of 6 in the field. There were legitimately people telling me, man, I'm not sure about Dennis Smith because Yogi Ferrell, man, he's good. He's going to start. He's going to play minutes. He's not good. He's okay. He's a below average backup point guard. I think that's sort of where we are with Yogi Ferrell. On to the Spurs, the return of Tone Parker. 14 minutes straight into starting, 6 points, 4 assists, and a quick reminder, Tony Parker was the 240th ranked player last season, not a season when he is a year older and returning from a significant quad tear. So there is absolutely no circumstance that you will add him in 12-team leagues, and you will not add him in 14-team leagues. It's great to see him back. We all love Tony Parker. He's just not a fantasy guy. It's just not what he is. With his return, DeJounte Murray out of the rotation, the amount of Spurs beat writers I saw today having to answer the question, A, that where's Rudy Gay? And he missed this game with a sore heel. Or why is DeJounte Murray not playing? It's ridiculous. It's because he's the third string point guard. And when you got your first two guys back, he's just not going to play anymore. So stash him for Dynasty. Pat Mills played 28 and had 12, 2, and 5. And his minutes will come down eventually when Parker gets his minutes back. He is going to play, more minutes while we wait for Tone Parker to return to his full minute load. But he's going to be playing 15 minutes a night, Tone, for at least the next 2 to 3 games. So we've got a little bit more time for Millsy to get some value there. Let's go on to the next game, which is the Sacramento Kings and the Golden State Warriors. The Kings with a huge victory over the Warriors. Will Cauley-Stein was fantastic. Still only 29 minutes, 19, 8, and 6 with a steal and 2 blocks. He was 8 of 9 from the field. Just play this dude 30-plus minutes. I don't understand how the move to the bench has enabled him to play more minutes or that why it's made him play better, but it has. So he is a must-own guy. But the rest of this team, there's still confusion reigning. George Hill goes from 30 minutes to 22 minutes back to 31 minutes. He had 16, 2, and 1 with 4 triples. Sure, add him, but don't hold on to him too much. He's going to fluctuate all year. While Frank Mason played better than De'Aaron Fox and played more minutes again. Who knows what the hell this guy's doing? 14, 3, and 4 for Frankie in 25 minutes, while Foxy had 6-4 and 4 with 2 steals. I would add Mason. I think he's a regular part of the rotation. I would add him in the deep leagues, in your 18s, and maybe your 16-teamers. And Fox, I would still be okay if you held him in 12s, but I wouldn't say he's a must-own guy there. Budrick Hield was preposterously piss poor. 5-1 in 15 minutes, and again, he's just not that good. I know he had a 7-triple game the other day. He's just not that good. While Scalabissier, 9-4, I don't really see owning him in 12-team leagues as being a priority. Yeah, he's starting, but he's playing limited minutes. I love the fact that they went small and they played 4 wings with Cauley-Stein down the stretch and Randolph played just 22 minutes. Randolph is not a winning player. He is not a positive contributor at all. He is an absolute black hole on offense and an inefficient black hole and shouldn't be getting 30 minutes a night, which is what he was getting. And let's hope this 22 minutes a night sticks, as we hope the 10 minutes a night from Kostas Kufos sticks, because there's no reason for him to play 22 minutes a night. But shout out to Vince Carter for getting his 18. Got to get him in there. On to the Warriors. They were without 2 of the best 4 players in the NBA, the other 2 players being Harden and LeBron, of course. Pat McCaw made the start, as did Omri Caspi, who had 9-4 in 30 minutes. Caspi's been much better than that for most of this season, so any other starts, I'm happy to roll him out as a GPP DFS option, but obviously he's a deeper league guy for other leagues. Draymond was inefficient, 14-4-8 on 15 shots, while Clay had 21-5 and filled the other categories up. Jordy Bell, I said, the stats rock. He just fills them up, man. 4-5 in 6 minutes with a block. There were people, though, after that start for Draymond the other day, oh, do I go and add him in 14-team leagues, 12-team leagues? Like, no, he's just not going to play enough. It was great, and we know what his potential is, but he is just literally not going to play anywhere near enough minutes to become anywhere close to valuable in those sort of leagues. The last game of the night, the Lakers and the Clippers. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope took 28 shots. He saw 29 points, but that is a lot of shots. 5 triples, 6 rebounds, and 3 steals. He's been solid this season, but pretty much more of the same from KCP. Larry Nance was back. He started, and he played 30 minutes. I really like Nance. 9-8 with 4 steals and a block. His defensive numbers, his field goal percentage, have use in 12-team leagues. If he's going to play 30 minutes a night, which I don't believe he will, but he will play 24 to 25 a night, then he has value. Jordy Clarkson's stellar efficient run continued. He was 17 points on 67% shooting with 8 rebounds and 5 assists, while the future MVP Kyle Kuzma moved to the bench and played only 20 minutes. 15, 2, and 3, I would still hold him. Julius Randle, he was on 11 and 3 in 24 minutes, but he did get one of those runs of minutes when that bench unit started to play well, so he got kept in for longer. It looked like he wasn't going to even crack 20 minutes earlier on in the game, while Brook Lopez didn't. 16 minutes, 5-1-1 with 2 blocks. I get the feeling that this is going to be a relatively common occurrence for Brook. Now, he had foul trouble here, as did pretty much the entire Lakers team. But I think you're going to see more games of under 20 minutes for Brook than you will see for games over 30, especially with Nance back in action. Lonzo had 3, 5, and 7, and Brandon Ingram got into foul trouble too and only played 22 minutes and had 17 and 5. Onto the Clips. The big news is the injury to Blake Griffin.
Oh, no!
Oh, no, indeed. It looked horrendous. He had his knee sat on by Austin Rivers, 26, 11, and 6. The Clippers are saying it is a left knee injury. And completely anecdotally, when teams come out and say broad statements like that, it's not good. They know what it is. They just want it absolutely confirmed. And if it comes out that it is a significant ligament tear, I wouldn't be surprised. Now, you don't drop Blake Griffin at any stage. Now, people come out, who's the pickup? Who's the pickup? Well, in so many cases in the NBA, when someone goes down who isn't a point guard or who isn't a center, and Blake is clearly neither of those, there's never one clear winner. It's a cavalcade of different guys. Now, if the Rooster Danilo Gallinari was back, I'd say it'd be Wes Johnson. But he's not. So Jono's already playing at the three. So we saw Sam Decker come in late in the game, and he closed the game, and he can be a decent player. So in a 14-team league, I'd be okay with grabbing Sammy Decker. The other guy that could play there is the table, Montrezl Harrell, who we saw put up some decent numbers in his time in Houston. Does it give Will Reed some extra minutes to play alongside DeAndre Jordan? Maybe. Do we see more extra small lineups with Austin Rivers playing at the four and a guy like CJ Williams get some extra playing time? And he played 16 minutes here, Sendarius Thornwell or Juwan Evans. So there's numerous ways they can fill it up. I think it'll be Wes Johnson and Sammy Decker as the two main primary beneficiaries, and probably the table, Montrezl Harrell, is the third guy. And I wouldn't say that any of them are absolute must-own, must-grab guys. Austin Rivers gets a bump in value because they're going to have to score somehow. He had 19, 8, and 6, and I would add him in 12-team leagues. He hasn't been a 12-team league guy so far this season. He is inefficient, but I would add him in 12s at this point. While DeAndre Jordan had the 9 and 9. We hope that Blake is fine. I don't think he will be. I think we're going to see him miss some time. And if you saw the injury, it's got nothing to do with being injury-prone. It's like he's trying to pick up the ball and someone sits on his knee. Like, very similar-ish to the Rudy Gobert injury, which looked horrendous. This looked pretty horrendous as well. Gobert escaped with a bone bruise. Maybe Griffin escapes with something like that. But I think that at minimum, you're looking at 3 weeks for Griffin, minimum. And I think that's probably being pretty optimistic. So it's not looking great for this Clippers team, which is just, apart from the win today, they are in a significant amount of trouble. All right, that does cover all of those games from Monday's action. I am going to take a quick break now, and then we're going to come back and we're going to go through and talk about all 5 games for Tuesday for DFS. Before we do that, we have a song called Jenny Becker from the band Big School. I'm going to play that. I'm going to take a break. I'm going to have a drink, and then we're going to come back and talk DFS for Tuesday. Lineups for Monday's action on FanDuel. Big Reg Jackson had 32.5. Isaiah Whitehead with 30.1. Jimmy Harden at 69. Vic Oladipo 53.7. Kyle Anderson 34.5. Lance Stevenson 38.1. LaMarcus Aldridge had 64.5. Jeff Green had 32.5.
My name is Jeff.
And Andre Drummond 70.4 for a total of 425.3, and that cost $59,500. On DraftKings, JJ Barea 36.5, Lance Stevenson 38.5, Pat McCaw, 40.25. LaMarcus Aldridge, 61.5. Drummond had 70.5. Jim Harden, 73. Corley Stein, 43. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, 46, for a total of 409.25, and that cost $49,600 dues. All right. Tuesday's action, five games on the slate for DFS. We will start with the Miami Heat taking on the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs on a back-to-back. They are favored by 3.5, and the total is 208.5 points. We expect that Jose Calderon will get another start and that Shumpert will be eased in. So really hard to use any of those guys. Let's talk point guards, though. On FanDuel, the pricing is really tight. I expect the scores to be not very high at all on this five-game slate, so bear that in mind. Dragic, the Iron Shoulder, at 6,900. I think in this sort of a slate, it is a significant... he's worth a look at in both cash and tournament. Wouldn't be on a bigger slate, but for here, I think it's all right. Tyler Johnson at 4,800. Well, he's got that nice tournament upside. Backcourts against the Cavs. That's starting to ease off a little bit. We didn't see any big numbers for the Cavs. JJ Redick struggled, Benny Simmons struggled, but it is still, you know, something to pay attention to. And I like Johnson as a GPP type of a guy. At shooting guard, you've got Shumpert. Deion Waiters at 6,100. Hey, is that a revenge game? I don't really feel much for Deion, but in a GPP, if you want to go Cavs backcourt narrative, sure. And the plumber, J.R. Smith, 4,100, only for tournaments for me. Dwayne Wade, Kyle Korver. Well, I'm not interested in Wade at all on a back-to-back, while Korver at 3,900 is only a tournament player. You can look at, of course, the Duke, Wayne Ellington, at 3,500, averaging 23 points over his last three games. And at 3,500, that looks like absolutely fantastic value, and I would be all in on that in tournaments. And in cash... maybe. I'm not fully confident with it for cash, so I'd probably lean off it. But for tournaments, I do really like the Duke here, who's capable of, you know, 7, 8x value, and he's been getting it relatively regularly. At small forward, Joshie Richardson at 42. He is averaging 11 points over the last five. Just absolutely horrendous stuff. The salary has not come down enough. I like the matchup. I like what he does. I like his minutes, but the production has been absolutely shitful. On the other side, LeBron James at 12,000.
LeBron James.
It's expensive. If you can find enough cheap guys to put around him, sure, but on FanDuel, I'm not sure you're going to be able to. So maybe in a tournament, he is fine, but for cash, I'm not interested in LeBron at cash just because of the way you'd have to structure the rest of your lineup around him. At power forward, you've got Jimmy Johnson at 5,800. He had a monster in the last game. I wouldn't be expecting a replica of that for Johnson. Well, Jay Crowder at 4,500. No, Olynyk and Jeff Green. Olynyk's an interesting one. He's at 4,200, and with Hassan Whiteside bothered by that knee, Olynyk's got 26, 28 point upside, which is okay at 4,200, so I might consider him. At center, Love's at 7,900. I just feel zero confidence in using him at this point. Channing Frye the same, and with Hassan Whiteside battling that knee at 8,400, just feels quite a bit too expensive for Hassan. Over on DraftKings, for tournaments, I like Love at 72 over there. Korver at 36 is always worth a look. And the Duke at 3,600. And for cash, LeBron's at 11,300. So a much more manageable price on DraftKings. In fact, there's much more value on DraftKings in general. While Tyler Johnson at 4,200. I love that for cash as well. I think that's stupidly low in this matchup. Really do like Tyler Johnson at that $4,200 price point over on DraftKings. Let's go to the next one, and it is Phoenix and the Chicago Bulls.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again.
We don't know if Devin Booker is going to play. If Booker is out, then Troy Daniels gets the boost, as does Joshie Jackson. Daniels is a GPP guy. Jackson probably is as well. At point guard, the starter will likely be, again, Tyler Ulis, but who knows what Jay Triano is going to do. 65% of the time, he plays his starter more minutes. That is a completely made up percentage, but it's around that amount. And the other time, the backup gets more minutes. So Ulis and both Mike James, they're both worthy of looking at as a tournament guy. James dropped a 40 in the last game, so you can have a look at him, especially against his putrid Bulls team. At point guard for the Bulls, it's much the same. Jaren Grant has played well in the last couple of games. He's at 4,700, so you can have a look at him as a GPP guy. Same as Chrissy Dunn at 6,100. Well, not the same, because he's been shithouse in the last few games, but he is worth a GPP look with 40-point upside, and Grant's got 35-point upside. If I'm going to take one, I'd probably take the 47 on Jaren, just to save a little bit of money, but in cash, if I had to take one of them, I would take Dunn in cash. And then I'll probably go and put my head in the oven or something like that. At shooting guard, Justin Holliday, 5,500. Not a massive Justin Holliday fan, but in this matchup, I do really like him. And on this slate, Devin Booker at 7,100. If he plays, I'm all about Devin Booker at that sort of a salary. And Troy Daniels, of course, if Booker is out at 3,500, is worth a look. The Hammer, Denzel Valentine at 6,200. He dropped 41 casually in the last game. I am all aboard the Hammer in this one. Really do like what he has been able to do. TJ Warren at 7,400. I think he's a solid cash play as well on this slate. Joshie Jackson at 4,000. In the last game, Booker missed. He had 16 points. He started, he played 23 minutes, but yeah, whatever. He's a tournament guy. Definitely wouldn't be locking him in cash. At power forward, Lowry Market in 6,900. He dropped 42 against the Suns in their first meeting. I think at 6,900, it's too high to rely upon him for cash, but I would absolutely look at him in a tournament because it is against the Suns and he can have a massive, massive time there. Punchbob Shiploke at 4,800. Well, he won't get too much junk time in this game to jack up the shots because both these teams are terrible, so I'm not interested in using him. Or Dragan Bender, just too much inconsistency. Same with Marquise Chris and Jared Dudley. Although Jared Dudley, 27 points in 18 minutes in the last game at 3,500, that's very good. But of course, how can you have any sort of faith there? At center, Robin Lopez at 5,000. He's an okay play there. For cash, I don't actually mind using Robin Lopez. And I'd almost say the same for Tyson Chandler at 4,800. I'd prefer Lopez, but Chandler inexplicably gets consistent minutes around 25. So he does have a level of reliability. Alex Len will probably be a DMP CD again. Who knows how Triano is going to run that. And we might see Greg Monro start at power forward again.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
Yes, it could very well get dangerous. Munro started, played 17 minutes. He's at 4,300. Man, in a tournament on a five-game slate, anyone's really in play, but my level of confidence in Greggy is not altogether that high. Over on DraftKings tournaments, you've got Justin Holliday at 55, Markkanen at 6,700, and for cash, I like TJ Warren at 73, I like Tyson Chandler at 44, and I like the Hammer at 5,600. Let's move on now to the next game. It is the Washington Wizards and the Minnesota Timberwolves. We know that Johnny Wall is out. We don't know the status of Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
If Jeff Teague is out, Tyus Jones becomes someone that we absolutely have to deal with. The amount of people ask me, man, do I add Tyus Jones? Do I add Tyus Jones? Look, sure, if Jeff Teague is out, but he's not. So it's just crazy the amount of questions. Like, Jones is good, don't get me wrong, but he'll play 9 minutes a night if Teague is healthy. So that's one we want to pay attention to. Obviously, Nemanja Bjelica, if he is out, Taj Gibson gets a boost, and Gorgui Dieng actually does get some sort of a level of boost at 3,500 if he's going to play 20 minutes, which he should in a situation where Bjelica isn't able to play. Now, at point guard, we're going to have Tim Frazier start again for the Wizards. His salary is up to 4,900, which takes away a level of appeal, but not totally. The Timberwolves' defense is shitful, so I think that he can go out there and get those 25 points that you need. As for Teague at 7,300, with no Johnny Wall, if he plays, I would use him in a tournament. If he doesn't play, of course, Tyus Jones, who is now at 5,200, I would still use Tyus in cash and in tournaments. At shooting guard, Bradley Beal, 8,300. I feel pretty good about a 40-point, almost a floor for Beal in this situation, so I do like him there. While Wigo at 6,800 has been okay lately, 36 average over the last three. Shit tons of minutes, because why not? And he does have that ability, and he's been decently consistent this season, Wigo, but I'm still not ready to look at him as a cash type of play. At small forward, Jim Butler, 8,800. I think he's a very good tournament play here with 50-point upside, but I don't feel good about him just getting 44 regularly. While Otto Porter at 7,300, probably the only time I've really been on Otto without Wall around, his usage will increase, and I think that he's going to be able to exceed 35 points, so I do like him, probably still lean a little bit more tournamenty. At power forward, Markieff Morris is at 5,200. Not really feeling that one. While Taj Gibson at 53, I locked that in cash. 35 minutes, 30 plus points, I think is almost a guarantee from Taj. As for Jang, 3,500. If Bjelica is out, yeah, sure, GPP worth a look. At center, Marcin Gortat, 4,900 for Gortat. He is absolutely worth a tournament look against Townsie. Whereas for Towns at 9,500, I think that he's got 50 written all over him, especially if Teague's out. If Teague's out, I'd look at Towns as almost moving into lock-type territory without actually being 100% a lock. the DraftKings guys we want to look at. No real tournament guys, but I like a lot of cash. Well, sorry, no exclusive tournament guys, but I like Gibson at 58. I like Porter at 64 quite a lot. I like Townsley at 9,100. Brattle's Beal at 79. Jim Butler at 76. I like extraordinarily hugely. And Timmy Frazier at 4,100 is obviously a real value play. And of course, if Teague is out, smashing Tyus Jones at 4,300. The next game we'll take a look at, we've got the Denver Nuggets and the Utah Jazz. The Jazz are favored by 1.5, and the total is 206.5. Howell Neto is questionable with a rib issue. If he is out, Alec Burks gets a bump in his minutes. For the Nuggets, though, Wilson Chandler is the one we want to pay attention to. If he is out with this back issue, which is plaguing him, then Farton Will Barton will start, and he will play probably close to 40 minutes, and that will make him an excellent DFS play. Last game, he was weirdly under 20 as Ken Fareed started. Now, with the Jazz going with Jonas Jerebko at power forward, how will that change Mike Malone's lineup? Will he start Fareed? I think that he will. I don't think that with Chandler ailing, he'll push Chandler to the fore. So I think that you're going to have potentially Barton limited to a degree. At point guard, the Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray at 5,000, played 37 minutes in the last game, put 31 points up. I like him as a tournament guy, but that's about it. While Ravishing Rick is down to 5,700, and that's appealing enough for me in a tournament for him against Murray, against the Nuggets. 30 points for Rubio shouldn't feel like any. If you said if Rubio gets 30 points, you wouldn't go, man, what are you talking about? How could Rubio possibly get 30? It's a real chance, and then he breaks through value. So that makes him worth a look, in my opinion. Manny Moutier or Hal Neto, no thanks. At shooting guard, Gaz Harris at 6,000.
Nice, Gary!
I think that's really strong for cash, especially if Wilson Chandler is out. Well, Rocket Rodney at 6,100. I'd prefer Gaz to him, but I think that Rocket at 6,100 is still valuable. While Don Mitchell, I like Don Mitchell, but 7,300 restricts him to me to be a GPP sort of a guy. While Farton Will Barton at 6,300. Chandler's out. He's in. Chandler in, probably fade Barton. At small forward, Joe Ingles, 5,800. He's been really good this season in a seasonal category league. DFS, he's not quite at that level, so I'm not feeling too much about using him. Well, Tarbo's at 3,700, and you can probably leave him alone. Wilson Chandler at 5,000 has not done well with Millsap out. Tournament, you could look at it. That's a nice price reduction, but I don't feel super good about him. If he is out, Juancho Hernangómez at 3,500 would be an interesting tournament look, but probably not a successful one. Jurepko's at 3,700, no interest there. Derek Favors at 6,900. I'm not sure there's much upside there in Favors, and I don't feel confident about his floor, so that's somewhat of a fade. Well, Ken Fareed at 46, if we hear he's starting, I would consider him in cash. If we don't have word, I would look at him as a GPP player. At center, Jokic, 9,300. Yeah, I'm okay with using Jokic here in this matchup. No Gobert. Gobert really bothers him. Favors is nowhere near that same player, so 9,300 for Jokic is definitely worth a look. I would prefer Towns to him overall on the slate, though. Udo at 3,500, nah. And Mason Plumlee at 4,200. Let's go with that as a nah as well. The DraftKings situation for this game. For tournaments, I like the Blue Arrow at 51 and Don Mitchell at 65. And for cash, there's Rocket at 57, Gaz at 52, Jokic at 87, and Jingling Joe at 4,800 is a number I can get behind on DraftKings. The last game of the night, we have got the Milwaukee Bucks and the Sacramento Kings on a back-to-back. The Bucks are favored by 7, and the total is 198.5. Matty Dellavedova is doubtful with his knee issue. At point guard, De'Aaron, to be honest, the Kings players, apart from Will Cauley-Stein, I can't see how you can use any of them. De'Aaron Fox at 4,700, but George Hill at 4,500 in a tournament, maybe. Frankie Mason at 3,500. Throw him in a GPP, but I wouldn't be looking at too much there. Chrissy Middleton, 68. Oh, actually, we're going to go to the Bucks point guards. Eric Bledsoe, $7,000. Love this for Bled. 35 points, feels relatively safe, so I really do like him here. At shooting guard, Chrissy Middleton, 6,800. Also, think it's a strong play for him. Garrett Temple at 37. He plays minutes but just does nothing with it. Brogo at 5,300. My confidence has not been restored, unfortunately. Budrick Hield, Tone Snell. No. At small forward, Yanni's at 11,800. Yeah, I'm good with Yanni. I'd prefer Yanni to the 12,000 you pay for LeBron. I think that he's definitely got 55, 60 point upside here against the Kings. At power forward, the Muppet John Henson, 5,500. I'm in on using him at that salary. Zebo's at 58. I think that's a fade. Labissiere, no way. At center, Kufos, 35. No thanks. Cauley-Stein at 63. I would look at him. It is pretty expensive, though, for Will. He's been putting up some good numbers, but I would look at him more as a GPP guy, while Thon McCur is at 3,500, and he is at 3,500 for a reason. On DraftKings, some cash plays, Bledsoe at 66, Middleton at 66, Yanni at 11.2, and the Muppet John Henson at 4,700. Corley Stein at 5,100 is also a very appealing price for tournaments and for cash games. Let's go across to the other sites now and go through some options here. On Yahoo, Garrett Temple for tournaments, along with Tyler Ulis, Willie Cauley-Stein, Ken Fareed, George Hill, Justin Holliday, Jamal Murray, The Duke, Kelly Olynyk. And then for tournaments, Brattles Beal, Carl Anthony Towns, Jim Butler, Rocket Rodney Hood, Gaz Harris, The Hammer Denzel Valentine, The Muppet John Henson, Jinglin Joe, Jaron Grant, Timmy Frazier, Tyler Johnson, and Tyson Chandler. On Moneyball for tournaments, Corley Stein, probably swing him to a cash play now, actually. Dion Waiters at 55, Markkanen at 63, Tyler Johnson, Jim Butler, Don Mitchell, Kelly Olynyk. They are all GPP plays on Moneyball. For tournaments, it's Townsie, it's Taj, it's Wigo, Otto Porter, Eric Bledsoe, Yanni, Jokic, Tyson Chandler, The Iron Shoulder, Bradley Beal, Joe Ingles, Justin Holliday, Jaron Grant, The Hammer, and Tim Frazier. And over on DraftStars, for tournaments, Jurepko is a minimum salary player, Corley Stein, Jamal Murray, Kevin Love, Tyler Ulis, Ken Fareed. And for cash, we've got The Hammer, Frazier, Markkanen, The Muppet, Ingles, Don Mitchell, Holiday, Tyler Johnson, Derek Favors, Jim Butler, Brattles Beal, Jokic, Townsie, Rocket, Gaz, TJ Warren, LeBron James, Andrew Wiggins, and The Iron Shoulder. Don't forget, check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Grizzlies, where Peter Edmiston, Grizzlies expert and insider who had the inside word on this yesterday, he'll be breaking down all that he knows about the David Fizdale firing in Memphis. We are, actually, no, we're not done, because if you are listening to this on Apple Podcasts, go and leave a 5-star review. It is something that I would be really appreciative of. So if you could do that, that would be awesome. You can also find the podcast on TuneIn, Google Play, Stitcher, and on Spotify and on YouTube. Give it a thumbs up, give it a subscription, and leave a comment below. Share it with your friends. It'd be really awesome if you could do that. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. The Iron Shoulder.